This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
The wind turns like a dagger. The rain falls like a hammer. The sky has grown dark, but it's not too late.
Welcome to the 2006 KPFT Local Station Board Elections. This fall, 9 listener members and 3 staff members will be elected to 3-year terms on the board that governs our station. There has never been a more important time to support Radio for Peace. Please visit kpft.org and click on Elections for more information about the nomination process. Nominations are open until September the 25th. Come on, it's not too late. It's just right now.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Hello, it's September the 18th, and this is tonight's edition of Queer Voices. We'll have Jennifer talking with the Decadent Dessert, a sister's fundraiser people, Soul Laura and Elizabeth McLean. Jeff Reed from HERA will be talking to us on issues involved with the city referendum that we'll be voting on in November. Joey Guerrera and Ed Alvarez of the Houston Voice will tell us about their new format and expanded website. Plus, we'll have music, commentary, and a lot more. So stay with us.
Who are you?
On Queer. Would you not do that, please? Because we do that after we say what we're going to have on. Jennifer thinks it's so important that everybody knows who she is.
So
who are you? Do you think I'm going to forget to say I'm Deborah Bell?
Hell no.
You wouldn't miss that.
I'm Jennifer Renee.
I'm J.D. Doyle.
Greg Chapman.
Glenn Holt.
Elisar Saliba.
There you go. And that's your Queer Voices crew for tonight. And, you know, sometimes when I print everything out, then I can't find what I need when I'm looking for it. We've had 2 significant deaths this past week, and of course one is our beloved former governor Ann Richards, and we'll be talking about her passing a little bit later in the program when Carol Wyatt will join us to give us her latest rant and to appreciate the governor. But another passing that we want to mention is that of Tyrone Gardner. And Tyrone was a plaintiff in the landmark Lawrence v. Texas ruling that struck down homophobic so-called sodomy laws. In Texas, it was actually the homosexual conduct law. Tyrone Gardner was 39 years old. He passed due to meningitis last Monday in a Houston hospital, and he had been suffering for about 6 months. His brother had been taking care of him. He and John Lawrence, then age 55, challenged the laws when they were arrested in 1998 for having consensual sex in Lawrence's Houston home. The case eventually reached the U.S. Supreme Court, which ruled that Texas's homosexual conduct law, which criminalized gay sex, was unconstitutional. And because they had the courage to challenged that law, the U.S. Supreme Court recognized that love, sexuality, and family play the same role in gay people's lives as they do for everyone else, said Kevin Cathcart of Lambda Legal's defense. He's the executive director of Lambda Legal. And this is a colossal legacy and one for which our community should be forever thankful. He was a real hero by being out there and willing to, you know, be public about what most of us like to keep pretty private.
I don't really understand how much of a hero those two were.
No, they don't.
These were not activists.
No.
These were just
folks. In fact, he said, I never wanted to be a hero.
But to put themselves out there for a five-year process, that's what it took.
And it went through several appeals and all of that before it finally got to the Supreme Court. And what has usually happened when someone got arrested under that statute was they would just pay a fine. And
They probably weren't the first ones arrested.
They were
just the first ones who decided
to fight it.
It
was a good test case.
Yes, it was. And when the decision came down from the Supreme Court, it was the week of our celebration of Pride. So it was very timely. And we had a rally downtown. Mm-hmm. J.D., I believe you taped it, and people can go to queermusicheritage.com and hear the speeches that
you can hear all the speeches at the rally and at the press conference earlier that day where it was actually announced.
Right.
I recorded both of those.
And I don't think Tyrone or John ever said that much.
No, they made some comments, but very brief.
They were very quiet.
They were both very self-assuming, very quiet folks. Didn't want publicity.
And that
makes it their heroism all the more marked to me.
Yes. And there was a picture in Newsweek, and people were telling me, your picture is in Newsweek. I said, it is. I'm all excited, you know. And I said, well, why is it in there? They said, well, it has to do with the case that was overturned. I said, well, I spoke at the rally, so it must be a picture of, you know, the people at the rally. The picture is someone hugging Tyrone and John, and you see that person's back and Tyrone and John's faces, and in between
was it a wide angle lens?
Yes. And in between their faces, there's just a little part of a nose and a silver hat belonging to guess who? Moi. So I am
miss that hat.
I will forever be the lesbian that was between the two guys that were caught doing it. And actually, I think the person hugging them may have been Carol Wyatt, but I don't know. I've been meaning to ask her that, so later we'll ask her more about that. But first up on the program tonight, we're going to be talking to the folks from Assisters. And they're coming into the studio right now, I hope. I always tell guests to come in a little bit early so that we know that they're here and we don't get into a panic about, oh my God, what are we going to do? Oh, actually, I'm wrong. We're going to go to the news wrap. That's what y'all are trying to tell me.
I see you confuse our engineer, and he stepped away from the
console. Yeah, now he went to get the guest, and he thought, oh, no, she's going to be upset. It's okay. Would you? Greg's going to go talk to the guest, and Glenn's going to punch the button for news wrap.
Okay, make a decision, Deborah.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Kareem Ferguson.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 16th, 2006. Uruguay is on the verge of becoming the first country in South America to legally recognize gay and lesbian couples. New legislation by the ruling leftist coalition of President Tabaré Vázquez has already passed the Senate and is expected to pass easily in the Chamber of Deputies. The measure to create a civil unions registry would grant same-gender and unmarried heterosexual couples who have been together for at least 5 years all the rights of marriage. LGBT advocacy groups in the country say they will still continue to push for full marriage equality. Supporters of the civil unions measure argue that judges have been unsure how to rule in a number of cases involving same-gender couples because the country does not now legally recognize them, particularly in the areas of adoption, pensions, and inheritance. In a region often dominated by the queer, unfriendly Roman Catholic Church, civil unions registries have already been established in neighboring Brazil, in the city of Buenos Aires, and in the state of Rio Grande do Sul. Similar legislation is expected to be introduced later this year in the Chilean Congress.
But a queer rights organization in South Africa is expressing concern about a civil partnerships bill there. The LGBT advocacy group OUT says the proposed legislation falls short of last December's constitutional court order that same-gender unions be given legal status equal to married heterosexual couples. In its ruling, the High Court gave Parliament a year to amend the country's marriage law, mandating that whatever legislative remedy is chosen must be as generous and accepting towards same-sex couples as it is to heterosexual couples, both in terms of the intangibles as well as the tangibles involved. In a context of patterns of deep past discrimination and continuing homophobia, appropriate sensitivity must be shown to providing a remedy that is truly and manifestly respectful of the dignity of same-sex couples. But according to a statement issued by Fikile Vilakazi, OUT's advocacy officer, the civil partnerships bill now before Parliament will mean the administration of a separate legal structure for same-sex couples. This sends out a message that gay and lesbian people are second-class citizens. The civil partnership option should be provided in addition to marriage, not as a replacement to it. Meanwhile, the Marriage Alliance of South Africa has been sponsoring marches in Cape Town, Durban, and other cities to protest giving any legal rights to gay and lesbian couples. It's uncertain what form the final version of the mandated legislation will take in the world's first country to constitutionally ban sexual orientation discrimination. South Africa's parliament has a few more months to comply with the constitutional court order.
A recent federal court decision in Australia requires same-gender couples who break up to pay capital gains taxes on land holdings they divide when the relationship ends. A lesbian couple split up after 11 years together. After division of their joint assets, one woman ended up with the family home and the other got an investment property. But when the couple tried to transfer the ownership of the investment property, it triggered a massive capital gains tax bill of about $20,000 for each woman and the resulting court case. A heterosexual couple in the same situation would not have to pay any capital gains tax until such time as the property was sold. Australia's Administrative Appeals Tribunal found that only heterosexual couples qualify for the capital gains tax relief. The judge found that while changes in 1990 to the tax law defined heterosexual de facto couples as spouses, it didn't include same-gender relationships. Put in other words, he said, it is clear enough that the legislature was prepared to go so far but no further. There will undoubtedly be many who consider that the definition of spouse should include persons of the same sex, and the tribunal itself has some sympathy with this point of view, he added. But it is not the law at this time. The women's lawyer called it a discriminatory decision and said they're considering an appeal.
13 alleged lesbians were outed by the Ugandan newspaper Red Pepper late last week. They included two boutique owners, a basketball player, and the daughters of a former MP and a prominent sheikh. Under the headline, Kampala's Notorious Lesbians Unearthed, Red Pepper urged its readers to provide it with information about any lesbians they know. To rid our motherland of the deadly vice, the tabloid said, we are committed to exposing all the lesbos in the city. One Ugandan lesbian activist told reporters that, I know that some women are definitely going to lose what they have, jobs, homes, families, and friends. Red Pepper outed 45 alleged gay and bisexual men last month. According to Uganda's Gay and Lesbian Alliance, unidentified men in army uniforms assaulted one of the outed gay men. He was taken to a police station and forced to confess to being gay. Another young man on the Red Pepper list was thrown out of the house by his parents. His mother guessed that he had sought refuge with a gay couple he knows and gave police their address. They were arrested on homosexuality charges, subsequently released on bail, and are now in hiding.
There have been a series of government-backed attacks on Ugandan LGBTI people in the last year, including a police raid on the home of Victor Juliet Mukasa, the lesbian leader of the country's LGBTI movement. Homosexual activity is punishable in Uganda by life in prison under laws originally introduced by the British colonial administration in the 19th century. Activists there consider the continued outings to be an open invitation to the police and queer bashers, and they fear increased state and vigilante persecution. Red Pepper is reportedly owned by the half-brother of the president of Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, who British activist Peter Tatchell calls a homophobic tyrant who tramples on democracy and human rights. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have been among the global rights groups condemning the outings.
Nepal's queer community, who helped oust the regime of unpopular King Gyanendra, is now being targeted by the new government they helped put in power, according to a report this week by the Indo-Asian News Service. The new government pledged to uphold democracy and human rights, but has started what Nepal's most prominent queer rights group, Blue Diamond Society, calls a cleansing drive against obviously gay men and transsexuals, or Metis, in the capital, Kathmandu. Blue Diamond's president, Sunil Pant, says arbitrary arrests began about a month ago. Metis are being jailed and beaten by police and are often forced to falsely confess to having sex in public. They're being prevented from moving around freely in the capital, says Pant, and they have low literacy levels, no money, and almost no professional skills. In Nepal's conservative society, where a son is valued much more than a daughter, gays and lesbians are regarded as freaks, and homosexuality is a punishable offense. However, with the support of Blue Diamond, Nepal's first public gay wedding was defiantly celebrated earlier this year. Activists have been urging the new government to end homophobic laws and incorporate LGBT rights in a new constitution now being drafted.
The National Latino Congreso, the largest gathering of Hispanic community activists in the U.S. since 1977, approved a resolution during a three-day meeting this week in Los Angeles calling for full lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender equality and civil rights protections. The resolution also calls for, among other things, support for Latino-Latina LGBT people who want to openly serve their country in the military, for legislation that would enable LGBT Latino-Latinas to sponsor the immigration of their partners living in other countries, giving LGBT Latinos Latinas the choice to legally marry, and rejection of efforts to exclude LGBT people from the larger Latino Latina United States familia. Passage of this resolution represents not only a historic moment, said resolution co-author Marlon Morales of the National Latino Coalition for Justice, but in practical terms assures that Latino policymakers have a mandate to consider how their future policies and legislation will contribute to securing full human and civil rights for LGBT Latinos. Activist groups such as Bienestar, Equality California, and Lambda Legal also helped spearhead passage of the resolution.
And finally, lesbian tennis legend Martina Navratilova, a month shy of her 50th birthday, closed out her professional career this week in fitting fashion with a mixed doubles championship at the U.S. Open. Teaming with Bob Bryan to crown her competitive career, it was Navratilova's 59th Grand Slam title. She left the sport in 1994 after winning 167 singles titles, including six straight at Wimbledon from 1982 to 1987. She returned for doubles in 2000 and insisted before this week's tournament that it would be her last. "This is definite, not allegedly," she said. "This is a closed chapter. It's past midnight. It's past my bedtime." Navratilova said she thought she could have played another 5 years at a top level, telling reporters, "I'm quitting because I want to, not because I have to." Recalling her first pro victory at a tournament in Orlando, Florida in 1974, Navratilova said, "I didn't have anyone to hug because I didn't know anyone. I hugged a light pole next to the umpire's chair." Navratilova defected from then Soviet-dominated Czechoslovakia during the U.S. Open in 1975. She began a gradual public coming-out process a few years later, capped by her featured speech at the 1993 National March on Washington for LGBT Rights. Bryan and Navratilova won $150,000 for this year's U.S. Open doubles victory. When they were presented with the ceremonial check, Bryan handed it to Navratilova. "All yours," he said.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 16th, 2006. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Kareem Ferguson.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT.
Have I been sleeping? I've been so still, afraid of crumbling. Have I been careless, dismissing all the distant rumblings?
that I can't see. 'Cause I need to move. As a child, I danced like it was 1999. My dreams were wild. The promise of this new world would be mine. Now I am throwing off the carelessness of you.
And that was a little bit of Melissa Etheridge doing I Need to Wake Up from the movie An Inconvenient Truth.
Okay, cue them.
Right. Well, good evening. Well, that was only part of it. We'll hear the rest of it later, maybe. This is Jennifer Renee. We're here with Saul Lara, Elizabeth McLean, and Andra. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Haviland. And Elizabeth,
yes.
what's going on? Let me get this. Decadent dessert.
And more.
And more.
Yes.
Fundraiser.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay, tell me about it. When is it and all that?
It's coming up Sunday, October 8th, 4 to 7. It's going to be at South Beach. And I think, Sol, would you like to fill them in a little more on that?
Sure. Decadent dessert. It's a fantastic fundraiser. This is our sixth year in existence. Now we are celebrating a sister's 10th anniversary this year, so it's a great event. The wonderful thing about it is it's being held at South Beach.
Okay.
Which is a wonderful venue.
Sisters? Is it Us Sisters?
Us Sisters. Yes,
okay,
that's the name of the organization.
Assist Hers.
Exactly. And what we do is we
very
have
clever, isn't
we
it?
Have,
I think that's clever, yes.
We
well,
have,
what does it mean?
It we assist our clients are lesbians and we assist them at home. That's the basic essence of our organization, and we do that because we want to keep them at home through ailments and diseases and just any kind of physical or mental sometimes handicaps that they may have, and we assist them at home so they can stay at home.
Elizabeth, you've been involved for quite a while with the sisters.
Yeah, I've been with them for about 5 years, and the concept behind it is, in fact, we're in our 10th anniversary, and the concept that we've got basically is a care team concept taken from the period from the 1980s with HIV circumstances. Well, we've got about 100 volunteers, 25 teams, 25 to 30 clients, and our idea is to be able to help these women with illnesses such as cancer, HIV, heart disease, and as Saul was saying, provide them transportation, do light housework, errands with the pets, whatever, just to keep them able to function in the world.
And sometimes it helps give their partner a break, or they might be estranged from family and not really have that good of a support system.
Absolutely.
And it might just be somebody who had surgery and needs a little bit of assistance while they're going through recovery. You don't necessarily have to be chronically ill, but I do know that Assisters has a chronic need for more volunteers, that you have a waiting list of clients.
One of the things we've seen is a change over the past 10 years since we've been in business, as it were, is that we're getting more clients with chronic illnesses. So yes, we constantly need volunteers to take up the slack as far as that's concerned.
If you want to volunteer, how do you get in touch with you?
Well, basically, there are a couple of ways. You could certainly go to our website, www.assisthers.org. That's one of the best ways to find us.
Okay. And this is your fundraiser, right? The Decadent Desserts. This is your fundraiser. And what does all of the Decadent Desserts entail? I'd never heard of it till tonight.
It is an annual event of sweet indulgence to raise money for our organization. Every single penny that is raised goes to our clients. I mean, every single cent. This year we'll feature, right now we have 10 restaurants, 10 confirmed restaurants that are, will be participating. They donate their culinary food, and the caterers are extraordinary. The food is extraordinary, and they donate up to 250 portions of food for our guests, and that's quite a bit. And when they do this, they do it because they know that this is an unbelievable organization, and that every single cent goes to our clients.
I think when they first started, they pretty much just served all these wonderful desserts, and then later it became competitive.
Now, last year for the first time, we actually did have judging. For example, our participants, are Evan Carter and Cooley, Rainbow Lodge, of course, Catering, Jim Benton Catering, Eatsy's, Amanda's Bake Shop, and some of them, most of them, are returning again this year. For the first time last year, though, we did have a judging for our. I guess what it does is it just emphasizes presentation as well as taste.
They need to let me be the judge of chocolate, don't you think?
I think so, too. I like chocolate, too. We could both be. Well, did you get all of the names of the people who are participating? We don't want to leave anybody out.
Well, no, yeah, we definitely want to say Pepper Tree Veggie Cuisine, excuse me. Trevisio, for the first time, is joining us. Prego is joining us for the first time. And a newcomer to Houston, his name is Joe Stelham. We found out this weekend that he is going to present his catering culinary, and we're just excited to have him on board.
Well, now, let's see if I understand. Remember, I don't know. Now, do you go to these different places?
They're all going to be at South Beach on October the 8th from 4 to 7. They will have their tables set up, their presentation.
Oh, okay. So you're not going to be traveling around.
No.
We make it very simple. That makes it easy for us to really overdo.
You purchase your $20 in advance, your ticket in advance, you walk in through South Beach and you start eating, pretty much. And it's just a wonderful
event.
Are
you sure this isn't heaven?
It could be. South Beach it could be heaven.
Well,
I remember
there'll be a bunch of angels there. Yeah, there'll be a bunch of angels there as well. And so when you say and more, that's because there's more than just desserts.
Yes, there's appetizers. You have a variety of appetizers. It could be anywhere from, we've had Vietnamese.
Yes.
We've had the traditional Rainbow Lodge type of appetizers, which are wonderful. And the desserts can range from, last year we had a huge beach cake.
Which is wonderful.
And a chocolate fountain. You get a little bit of everything.
I'm going to have to start saving my calories tonight.
Plus we have auctions and entertainment tickets. So we have
really?
Auction items and raffle items galore. Right. We're going to have a lot of things that you can bid for, and it's amazing how many people donate to this cause.
Now, is there going to be any entertainment, or is the food the entertainment?
No, the food is part of the entertainment.
Oh, okay.
But our icing on the cake is our entertainment.
I love it. You've done this before, haven't you?
No, I haven't. Ask Elizabeth. One of our entertainers is the Bayou City Women's Choir. They've been in existence for 1 year now. They're celebrating their year anniversary. They're part of the Men's Choir of Houston. And so they're going to be there, and they're going to give us some entertainment, which is going to be a lot of fun. I mean, and these ladies are looking forward to it. We're going to have about 30 women from the Bayou City Women's Choir there. Our second entertainer is actually here. She is present. Her name is Andra Haviland. And she does a little bit of everything with music.
Disc I think jockey? She said the best of both worlds.
The best of both worlds.
It is the best of both worlds. Well, it's not really a band, but you know what? I'm going to let Andra describe exactly what she does. She is right here, Andra.
Well, thank you. Yes, Best of Both Worlds is a live music and DJ service. It's a unique one-woman multi-instrumental DJ service that combines the sophistication of a live performance with the versatility of a DJ for the price of a DJ alone, often for holy unions, wedding ceremonies, receptions, and private parties. And I play live flute, guitar, and saxophone, as well as provide the DJ services. And I think we're about to hear one of my samples from my demo. Thank you.
of course, that was Under the Boardwalk.
It was? It sounded familiar. You were dancing to it.
So were you.
Well, okay. I mean, they could see that. If they were watching their radios, they could have seen all of that.
How many instruments do you play on that? How do you do that?
Oh, well, I play several, mostly woodwind instruments and guitar and bass. And what I do is I perform solo over tracks that I record and play over them to sound like a full band. And I also use bands of various sizes and styles as well.
And you've contributed your talents to the Houston Pride Band.
Yes, I'm playing tuba for them. That's a little different turn for me, and I'm enjoying that very much.
Yeah. And, in fact, October 19th, when the Pride Band presents Spooked on Classics, the half of the proceeds from each ticket sale will go to benefit a sister. So that works out really nicely.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's good of them.
And that event, again, is October 19th at 7:30 at Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church, 2025 West 11th Street. That's right off of T.C. Jester. And you can get more ticket information at 832-265-3346. And I'm sure we'll be having the fan folks on a little bit closer to that time.
Now, where else have you played? What area do you play in?
All over the Houston area, including south of Galveston, north as far as Navasota and College Station, and even I've gone out to other states to perform Best of Both Worlds.
So, how do you get in touch with you for if someone wants to get in touch with you for some performance, a wedding or something?
They have to go to Decadent Dessert.
There you go. She's bound to have some way of getting in touch with you. You've got a website, right?
I certainly do.
I told you.
It's bestofbothworlds.cc.
Okay. Is there a phone number or anything?
You can also contact me at 281-412-3321.
Good. Thank you so much. And is there anything else we want to talk about before we
I'd just like to mention that we will be having, you can, of course, yes, buy tickets online at www.assisters.org. We will also be at different venues within the next 3 weeks. We're going to be at RMCC during Sunday services, selling tickets there. Bering will be selling tickets there during Sunday morning services. And we will also be at Blur this coming Wednesday, which is the 20th, during the Women's Professional Night. We will be there set up selling tickets as well. So if you can't buy them online, but you want to join us at one of these venues, we'll be happy to
sell
you some tickets.
Everywhere I've gone lately, there's been an assistor's person there selling the advance tickets.
Yes.
There is a slightly higher price at the door, so
yes,
getting
yes
your tickets in advance is an advantage.
Absolutely.
And I've been to several of the Decadent Desserts in the past, and they're wonderful events. Meteor, for those that know, the size of that place was packed last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think South Beach is a bit larger, and something tells me that it's also going to be packed.
Well, we want to certainly thank Charles
and then we'll
Armstrong
be packed
for that. We're very happy
yes
about that.
Yeah, we want to thank Charles Armstrong and, of course, the management, general manager and management and staff of South Beach for allowing us to do that there this year.
Now, what's the time again? So
it is from 4 to 7 p.m. on October the 8th.
You can eat a whole lot in 3 hours.
In 3 hours, you can eat tons. And there's no limit. We're not going to stop you from going around
nobody
in circles.
Slaps your
twice.
No, not at all.
Was there somebody going to help me to the car after that?
I promise, Jack. I'll escort you.
I have a problem. Once I start on chocolate, it's over.
Me too. So we'll just leave together somehow.
We'll have to be a support system for one another.
Oh, absolutely. Let's get, how do you contact you again? Assisters?
www.assisters.org.
Okay.
And that is the best way that we can send you information. You can purchase tickets.
Spell how Assisters is spelled, because it is a little confusing for people.
It's A, double S, as in Sandy, I-S-T-H-E-R-S.
AssistHers.org.
Okay.
Yes.
And so, what is your position?
I am VP of Public Relations for Assisters.
And Elizabeth?
Executive Vice President.
All right. And Are you just lending your musical talents, or are you also an Assisters volunteer?
Oh, well, I'm honored just to be a part of Assisters, especially this kind of event. I'm totally looking forward to it, so I'm going to have a good time.
And, Andre, we just might recruit you for a volunteer. Yeah. So
they do need volunteers,
get too far from
so you can find out more about how to volunteer at Decadent Dessert.
And please do. Want to thank all three of you for being here tonight. Don't forget about it. This is Queer Voices. I'm Jennifer Renee.
Thank you.
This is JD, and that's Chris Perica, her second CD. She's an excellent guitarist, and that CD is called Dry Land.
I always just find such wonderful music and brings it to share with our audience on Queer Voices. This is Deborah Bell along with
Greg Chapman.
And our favorite pundit. You always wanted to be that when you grew up, didn't you?
Do you need a drum roll?
I have a little fanfare, a trumpet fanfare.
Yeah, a drum roll. The Wyatt Rant with Carol Wyatt, and I think you want to pay tribute, first of all, to Governor Richards.
I do. What a sad week in our state. The passing of just a legend in our community. And, you know, she was, I'm trying to think of phrases that describe her, like sassy and classy. Those seem to go together. And I did a quick note out to my social notes list maybe Wednesday when she died. And I got the most wonderful response, Deborah. Probably 25 people wrote me with little vignettes of having run into Anne during the years and the kindness she showed them and the friendliness and the respect to people who, you know, just would hail her as she passed in a plane or in a restaurant or something. So clearly she was one of those people that was just as genuine as she seemed to be.
She was a class act, and in fact, the last time I saw her was a few years ago, just before the elections. I guess that was 2 years ago. She was at Cafe Express on West Gray.
Go
and
figure.
It was a Sunday, and the women's group goes to lunch after they meet on Sundays. And she was in line behind me, and somebody said, "Hey, do you know who's in line behind you?" And they said, "No, Ann Richards." And so I turned around and said, "Hi." And then I said, "Well, there's a whole group of feminists over there that would love, you know, to have you come by." And she did. She went over and she spoke to everyone and was just, and I have a picture of myself with her from a Democratic convention, and they had Ann Richards for Vice President signs and buttons, and she has one on, and she turned to me and she says, "I just love that."
Well, she was one of a kind, and for all of you out there raising the next generation of Texas women, I hope you take time to tell them about Anne and the difference that she made in our government and in our society. So, on to happier things. I had a wreck on the way here.
That is way happier than Anne.
Well,
Vine.
It was just sheet metal.
But
I survived.
I'm impressed, though, because she made it on time just the same.
Oh, yeah.
That's
dedication. I mean, literally 15 minutes ago, and I get out and I'm going to the guy, "Okay, clearly you backed into me. You're guilty. Give me your stuff. I got to get out of here." he was tried and convicted right there at the intersection of Dunleavy and Westheimer. Yeah. I don't think there's a jury in the land that would throw that out.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad you're all right.
Me too. And the car will heal.
Yes.
Yeah.
It may take some work.
But it did make for an adrenaline-filled couple of minutes there.
And I bet there's some more adrenaline rushing through you, because you're a little upset about some of the bills currently before Congress.
Okay, so last week, but wait, there's more. So last week, we have the President of the United States going before a closed session of only the Republicans in Congress, not the full session, just his Republican buddies. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, to lobby them for two things that are going on. Number one, he wants the right to detain terrorists. He doesn't label them suspected terrorists. He just accuses them of already being terrorists.
Of course, we would never arrest someone who wasn't a terrorist, right?
Well, I trust him implicitly, but some may not. But anyway, he wants the right to hold them indefinitely without charges. If he does bring them to trial, he wants the right to convict them without their ability to see the evidence against them. And that includes death penalty cases. He wants the right to torture. And what the hell? Oh, sorry. Have we come to?
Now,
I mean, what country does that sound like? That doesn't sound like my country.
Is that just him while he's in office, or he wants the president of to always be empowered with this.
Yes, he wants bills passed. He's trying to diminish the impact of the Geneva Conventions and the Supreme Court.
Right, right. The only reason he's even wanting the bill is because the Supreme Court invalidated his current practices. Because he's basically doing this already. And he's only having to go before Congress because of the Supreme Court.
Right. Well, there's two things. The Supreme Court knocked down the military tribunals that he wanted to do. A Detroit federal judge knocked down the wiretapping. And the third thing is he is scared to death of being accused of being a war criminal because things are starting to come out, and it very well could happen. I really don't know the process that The Hague goes through to start those things, but, boy, if there's ever anybody who deserved it, he certainly does. You know, I did a little research. The Geneva Conventions were signed in 1949 by 192 countries, ratifying the way that we would treat prisoners. And it served us well through all of the wars that we've had up to this point. But Bush now claims that we need to abandon all of that because we're so scared to death of the terrorists.
And, you know, people may say, well, you know, we have to fight fire with fire. But the problem is you got Americans who get captured by who knows who. And what's happened previously is there is some mutual respect of those Geneva Conventions that has protected Americans who have been captured. And if we no longer honor it, why should we expect anyone else to?
Right. I wrote down seven things just while I was waiting to get the guy's driver's license, while he hit me, that I thought were wrong with torture, just off the top of my head. As you mentioned, it offers some hope of protection for our own soldiers when they get captured. Number two, it's just plain wrong, people. And this isn't about who they are, who our enemy is. It's about who we are and how we choose to conduct our lives. Somebody's waving at me. Was that a raw or a...
Actually, I just wanted to chime in after you were done with this list, so go finish up.
All right, hold that thought. We're on number two. Now moving on to number three. The experts tell us that torture simply doesn't work. The U.S. Army has told us that the rules of engagement that they have written down are the proper ways to treat prisoners, and they deliver a successful result in getting information as much as we can get, right? Number four, they've stood the test of time. The Geneva Conventions have been around for a long time, and I just think it's ridiculous.
Longer than me, even.
That is almost... you're not quite older than dirt? And number five, why should we abandon the moral high ground? That's just
exactly
a travesty to me.
Yes.
Number six, if the enemy believes that we will torture them if they're captured, then they are much more likely to keep fighting and resist being captured. So that puts our soldiers in more peril. And number seven, I didn't get to a Dave's top 10 list, just a number seven. I think it also degrades the torturer. The young men and women who are serving in our armed forces and who've been put in a position to have to torture people are never going to be the same again. They're going to come back as twisted people.
Well, this is true, and this is something that I always say about war being immoral, is because when you take people and have them do inhumane acts, it creates inhumanity within them. And we've done it to several generations, yes, mostly of men. And see what happens. You know, look at the numbers of homeless people that are veterans.
Yeah.
And that's what it says about our country, that we will dispose of people and do inhumane things. And I saw a bumper sticker on my way over tonight. Benjamin Franklin said this: there's no such thing as a good war or a bad peace.
He also said that those who would trade their liberties in exchange for security will get neither. I was talking to him just the other day.
And Ellie, what did you want to chime in on?
Well, as the resident, you know, Lebanese American here, I just wanted to say that, you know, every time the United States does something that falls from the moral high ground, you know, people get upset because people from the Middle East usually come from these repressive regimes. And when you're trying to say, well, we're going to lead the world, we are going to be the guiding light of the world, you know, with this war on terror. I mean, it's a great idea and concept, but when you're doing exactly what these regimes are doing, people begin to wonder, you know, where are we going with this?
Well, there you have speaking on behalf of all Lebanese.
The axis of evil gets pretty blurred when you're out there torturing yourself.
Yeah,
that's right.
I mean, you know.
So before we close out, Carol.
Oh, are we done?
We're almost.
Well, shoot.
About two more minutes.
Okay, could I tell you a couple of upcoming Pride things?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, Carol, by the way, is it the president of the board or the chair of the board of the Pride?
Supreme omnipotent ruler of the Pride universe.
She's right under me being the supreme mega grand diva of the whole blessed universe.
President.
Yeah. She's president of the Pride Houston Committee and also the moderator of socialnoteshouston.com.
Very good. You got it right this time. A couple of Pride announcements before I go. First of all, we're always looking for volunteers. You may think, for most of you, Pride is just something that happens in June. For over 100 of us, it's an event that we work on all year long to make sure that we have high-quality festivities for you. It's an awful lot of fun. It's a good mental and intellectual challenge to put all this together. No matter how much time you have to give us, whether it's a regular assignment or just spot duty, no matter what your skill sets are, we can find a place for you. PrideHouston.org. Go check it out. Our next sing-along brunch.
Oh, boy. Carol loves those sing-along brunches.
Oh, my God. We had so much fun. Is Sunday, October 22nd from 11 to 1:30 at Nymphas on Post Oak. This year's theme is TV theme songs and commercials. So My Baloney has a first name. Sing with me. It's O-S-E-A-R.
We'll have to get Tony involved with that.
A 3-hour tour. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's $40, $35 if you're a friend of Pride. And it goes to support Pride Houston.
All right. Thank you, Carol Wyatt, for ranting again. And be careful out there on the roads of Houston because Carol's about to get back on them.
A little road rage.
Yes. And you're listening to Queer Voice. This is Deborah Bell.
This is J.D., and if you thought that sounded a little like the Bee Gees, well, you were wrong. That was the Scissor Sisters with the track I Feel Like I Don't Feel Like Dancing from their new CD that comes out, I think, in about a week. The CD's called Ta-da!
It had a little bit of a Bee Gees-ish type sound to it, though. This is Deborah Bell, and I just want to remind you of a few things coming up on the calendar. One is the continuing presentation of The Normal Heart by Theater New West, which is at Baring and James Gallery through September 30th on Fridays and Saturdays with curtain time at 8 p.m., although there is no performance on September 23rd. You need to call for tickets and reservations at 713-522-2204, and tickets are also available at the gallery. An Evening with Donna Garrett, an evening of poetry on September 23rd from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Bead Atelier, 126 Heights Boulevard, number 106. And for more information on that, you can call 713-862-1223. And Sunday the 24th is a busy day. There's going to be a lot going on. But one of the things that's going on, it's very important, is a celebration of choice, a pro-choice rally to counter the harassment and attempted shutdown of Planned Parenthood. It will be at Bell Park, 4800 Montrose at Bank Street at 2 p.m. on Sunday the 24th. And for more information on that, you can go to myspace.com/ProChoiceHouston. And one of mine and JD's favorite people, Gretchen Phillips, will be at the Boom Boom Room, her Don't Stop Believing show. Reservations strongly suggested, fun and deep feelings strongly expected, so says Gretchen. And that's at 2518 Yale Street at 25th. And the number to call is 713-868-3740. For reservations, call 832-372-8691. You're listening to KPFT Houston, Texas. And now to...
This is Jennifer Renee.
And Greg Chapman.
And we're here with Jeff Reed from HERA, the Houston Equal Rights Alliance, with some, what's going on? There's something new on the agenda for the November 7th election.
Yeah.
Something having to do with the city.
There's something, I would say there's something interesting going on in the political landscape, but this is about as uninteresting as politics gets.
Which means it's probably very important.
Which means it's extremely important, and very few people pay attention to it. And this is one of the reasons I wanted to come on and talk about it. So if you'll bear with me for a minute, there are 8 ballot propositions that are going to be on the ballot in November. These are going to be identified as propositions A through H. And these are basically changes to the city rules about how the city spends money and how the city can borrow money so that the city can do the business of the city. Now, I don't want to get into the details because they are painfully boring. And I don't really even know or understand all of them because they're somewhat intricate. The things to know is the first 5 of these ballot initiatives, this is A through F, are just bond authorizations. And this is basically allowing the city to incur some debt. This is to the tune of about $625 million. And this is what the city does to try to pay for capital improvements, things like better police and fire stations, better radios for public safety, things like streets, drainage, parks, libraries. You can think of it as this is the money that the city spends on a day-to-day basis.
Now, and the important thing, if I understand, it doesn't affect the property taxes.
That is correct. The way these bond authorizations work is essentially the city, we are allowing the city to incur some debt that doesn't change the property tax structure, that doesn't add any additional taxes. This is completely tax neutral. There are no additional taxes associated.
Now, from what I understood, if I remember correctly, I think the city has reduced the tax rate, property tax rate, the last couple of years, haven't they?
I believe that's correct. One thing to
point out about these bond authorizations is the amount that's being asked for this time is less than the amount authorized in 2001. And the last five of these have gone through. So, you know, this is pretty non-controversial.
Okay. These are good things.
These are good things that the city needs to do. But unfortunately, they're extremely unsexy and somewhat uninteresting. And so they're the kind of thing that people, when they go to vote, they might say, well, I don't really know what that is. And, I don't want to vote for it.
But, what, are they on the last page?
But, yeah, they end up being towards the end, and they're certainly not as interesting as voting for people. Now, the other two, so the first five are the bond initiatives. The other two are even more technical and boring, and basically they just change the way the city can spend certain pots of money. So there are some restrictions called the city restricted enterprise funds, namely the airport system is one of them. And this simply changes the way the city is allowed to spend money out of those pots of money. Again, this doesn't increase any taxation. It is just changing the rules on how the city spends the money that it has.
Well, doesn't the airport fund, don't they generate all of their revenues from the airlines and the services they sell at the airport?
My understanding is this would allow the city to spend airport fund money outside of the airport system. So, you know, there are technical reasons why you would maybe think you would want to leave the money within the same system, but the city has decided that really the best way for it, and when I say the city has decided, I mean the mayor, I mean Anise Parker, I mean most of the people on council. The only people who are going to oppose this sort of thing are the extremist anti-tax advocates, so people like Grover Nordquist and the Club for Growth type people who, you know, famously Grover Nordquist said he didn't want to destroy government, he just wanted to starve it to the point where he could drown it in a bathtub with his bare hands. And these are the, you know, there might be some extremists on the right who are going to be trying to fool people into thinking this represents a tax increase, but it really doesn't, and it's really necessary for the business of the city.
Well, it was my understanding concerning the airport, not to beat up on it, but on the airport funds, those are generated by the airlines, and they're used to for improvements of the airport, and if they're continue to be limited by the current ordinances, then further expansion on the airport could be stifled, which means expansion of Continental and the rest of them for new gates.
Yeah, there could be some risk if the rules aren't changed about how the restricted enterprise funds are spent that the airport would be limited in its growth. And, you know, people may not realize this, but the airport is a huge source of income for the city, and the airport is a huge piece of the Houston economy, particularly Continental. I mean, you know, everybody knows Continental is here.
Yeah, it's our hub is here.
Exactly. And it's very important for us that hub stay a hub.
Right. So, and stay here.
This is kind of what that's about. And, you know, again, I realize this is not very sexy, and, you know, we aren't going into the details. You can Google some of these referenda, try to find some information. There's been a couple articles in the Chronicle. If you go to the Chronicle online and look through their past issues, you can find some information.
Yeah. Has the Chronicle come out for or against them yet?
I don't think the Chronicle has done their endorsements yet. I know that the Houston GLBD Political Caucus has endorsed them. I know they're endorsed by Ada Edwards and Sue Lovell and the mayor and Anise.
Didn't the seven ordinances, the referenda, pass the city council by 13-2? I think most of the council people approve of it.
Yeah, exactly. And most of the council is on board. So, you know, this is not really controversial. And in fact, I can't name a specific person who has come out vocally against this. The only names I can think of are people who are for it. But still, it is important. The city needs it to maintain its ability to grow and its ability to be a vibrant living city. And so I really encourage people, when you're out there voting, you know, it's not sexy, and I know you maybe, you know, we haven't given you really the tools to fully understand it, but it's important that you go and vote for these things.
Well, it sounds like that these are housekeeping type referenda for
exactly.
The city, those things that we need to support, vote for them. You don't need to necessarily understand the minutiae behind it, but let the professionals who do suggest is.
And it, like I say, you know, if you want more information, go out to the web, and if you do a little digging, you can find some more information.
Okay. And what else is HERA doing right now?
Well, HERA and the caucus have partnered to do a big voter identification drive, and that's really what we're working on right now. I'm voter identification and voter registration, I should say, because the voter registration deadline is early next month, and it's very important that everyone be registered to vote to have a voice. And
October 10th, I believe.
I believe that's correct. And so there's going to be a caucus block walk at the community center this Saturday at 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. If you show up, there'll be coffee and bagels, and you'll be going around knocking on doors and registering people to vote.
How's that going on? That's fairly successful?
Yeah, that's been going very well. The caucus, together with HERA, has knocked on an enormous number of doors. I heard the number earlier today, but honestly, I forgot. It's in the thousands, though.
So, over 2,000, I think. But I understand that's only halfway there.
I think that is about halfway there. And additionally, they've also sent out an enormous number of voter registration cards to try to just get everybody that the caucus and HERA know about who they have addresses for, who aren't on the registered voter list, registered to vote. And it's very important that people do that. And if you get one of those voter registration things in the mail, it takes, you know, all of 30 seconds to fill it out and send it in. And it is really the most important thing you can do as a citizen.
Oh, yeah. And so anybody that's listening, if you aren't registered to vote, obviously register to vote. But also if they've moved just within their own district or down the street, that they need to make sure that the address is up to date also, especially if you've changed precincts.
It's important that people register to vote at their current address, and if your address has changed recently, or if your address changed a long time ago and you never bothered to change your voter registration, it is important to do that now.
And how would they do that?
So there's a few things. For one, if you go to the GLBT Community Center, one more plug I wanted to give. On Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesdays at 6 p.m. at the Community Center, there's going to be voter registration activities, so people can come and get registered to vote at that time. They can come and they can help with phone banks or block walks at that time if they so choose. And that's at 3400 Montrose, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday at 6 p.m. at the Community Center, Suite 207. People can also go to the HERA website, www.houstonera.org, and there's information about getting registered to vote there. Also, one thing I wanted to mention, you know, it is important to get registered to vote, and as you said, the deadline was October 10th, and it's also important for people to do early voting, because everybody gets busy, and early voting is extremely easy. You just go in on a weekday or on the Saturday before the weekend of the election to your usual polling place, and you can just go and register your vote, and there are not going to be any lines and not going to be any crowds, because early voting is pretty sparse.
When does early voting begin, do you know?
Off the top of my head, I don't know. I can tell you it usually starts the week before the election, so the last week in October.
So sometime around the 23rd, somewhere
something
in there.
Like that, yeah.
Okay. And so the usual early voting precincts, I guess they can find out where they are by going to the county.
If you go to the Democratic Party site, their website is very easy to use in terms of getting the precinct list. I've tried both the Republican and Democratic websites, and the Democratic one just happens to be easier to use.
How about the Harris County website? Is it there too?
You know, I haven't tried the Harris. I know it would. I'm sure it's there.
The Harris County website has a particularly confusing URL, and you know, you can Google Harris County, and you can find some information, but you know, I wouldn't dare to try to give you the URL, because it always, and it's got like five different, you know, pieces to it.
Now, doesn't HERA have that information on its website?
HERA does have that information at www.houstonera.org. And you can also look at the caucus website, which is
hglbtpc.org.
And that also has an enormous amount of information about, you know, politics in the community and things like voter registration.
Well, I do know that, I believe, believe the referenda are posted there at the Houston GLBT Political Caucus website. I believe you can read them there.
And please go read them, especially if you have insomnia or some sort of sleeping disorder.
Well, a lot of people might want to read it. We haven't been quite specific.
I don't want to belittle people who, if you want to go read them, you really should go read them. But it is such inside baseball that I think it's hard to get people really interested in it.
Well, I have read portions of, I think, one or two of them, and you're right. It was a little on the slow side reading. You have to read things twice just to understand what you read. Any other information, and what have we missed that we need to cover?
Well, I just want to again reiterate for people, it is so important that not only you be registered to vote, but that everyone in your family be registered to vote, and everyone that you know be registered to vote, because it is really the first step in doing what we are all obligated to do as citizens, which is namely have our voice be heard. And so it is imperative that everyone not only make sure that they are registered to vote at their current address, but they talk to all their friends and make sure all their friends are registered to vote at their current addresses. And if, you don't get registered to vote, you're not going to be able to vote, and if you don't vote, then, as we all know, you're not allowed to complain after the election if you
That's
don't like
That's right.
The outcome.
If anybody walks up to you and wants to complain about the election or someone that was elected to office, the first thing you ask, did you vote? If they say no, just tell them they don't get to complain anymore.
And if their excuse was they weren't registered,
well, then you need to go register, and you need to do that before October 10th.
Yep.
Now, anybody in this country that's the ultimate survey. All of these surveys and polls that are out there, they say how it's going to go. The final and ultimate poll is the poll that comes out when they add up all the votes on November 7th.
And, October 10th is only 3 weeks away, so it's really not time to delay. And whether you like it or not, exactly. Yeah, I did a pun. Wasn't even on purpose.
Delay?
Yeah.
Oh, whatever.
And, whether you like it or not, the government has a big influence on your life.
Yeah,
That's it.
Truly does.
Well, Jeff Reed with HERA, Houston Equal Rights Alliance, we appreciate you being here tonight.
Well, thank you.
This is Queer Voices. I'm Jennifer Renee.
And Greg Chapman.
This is JD. That was New York artist Terry Christopher with a kind of ephemic song called, what was that called? It was called Brothers in Arms and Sister Soldiers. That was a sneak listen to his new CD that comes out next month, and it's called Journey of a Wordsmith. And stay tuned for This Way Out.
Hey, all right.
I remember your name, I remember your voice, I remember your dreams, I remember your tears, I remember your life, I remember your love, love never dies, I remember your name.
It's been almost 30 years since Andrew Halloran's groundbreaking novel, Dancer from the Dance, described as one of gay literature's most important works. Halloran is a journalist, teacher, and the author of several other notable novels, but he hasn't published a new one in almost a decade. That drought has ended with the semi-autobiographical Grief, about a lonely and jaded middle-aged gay professor trying to cope with many losses. Halloran recently sat down with This Way Out's Brian Goble in San Francisco to read an excerpt and to explain how the letters and journals of Mary Todd Lincoln leads his protagonist to new, poignant truths.
Andrew Halloran, it does seem like the protagonist, whose name we never learn, is grieving many things, has a kind of collective grief. His life is filled with loneliness. He wants intimacy. And he's also trying to deal with the loss of friends who've died of AIDS. And yet, you said in an interview that as you were writing this, it was sometimes difficult for you to pin the source of the grief.
It's true. The weird thing about writing is you do something and then you hear from other people what you did. And I didn't know what I was doing writing this book, really. It was a very strange experience. I felt like I was crawling through some foggy, smoky stuff, just feeling my way. And in Philadelphia, at the first reading, at the Q&A, a man said, "This book isn't about grief," he said. "It's about untreated depression." And I said, "Well, okay." And then another person said that it's really about coming to terms with a loss of desire. And I said, okay, that too. And walking around this morning, I was thinking to myself, it's about loneliness. It's about aging as a gay man. It's about the loss of friends to AIDS. It's about the loss of the narrator's mother. It's about the loss of a lot of stuff. So I think you're right. But I wasn't aware of it at the time. The narrator goes to visit his friend Frank, who has asked him to come to Washington. And Frank has lost his mother, too. And they begin talking about grief. And Frank says in a strangely altered voice as I sat down on the edge of the bed, "Could you just fluff my pillow first and get the cold cream? I find cold cream so soothing on a day like this one." "I don't see how you can joke like that," I said. "It's easy," he said. "She didn't even recognize me the last 2 years. Besides, grief is useless after a certain point. Don't you agree?" "I suppose so," I said, "but everyone's point is different." "Of course," he said, "but the sooner you get over it, the better. Because none of us has any time to waste, you know. I'm sure your mother didn't expect you to sit in that house down there for the rest of your life babysitting her figurines. You can't sit Shiva forever." "Yes, you can," I said. "What do you mean?" he said. "I mean the only cure for grief is time. But some people need more than others. Some people, in fact, may never have enough time. Not everyone can move on." "Why not?" he said in a cool voice. "Because grief is what you have after someone you love dies. It's the only thing left of that person. Your love for, you're missing them. And as long as you have that, you're not alone. You have them." "But they're gone," he said. "Not if you grieve," I said. "Your grief is the substitute for their presence on Earth. Your grief is their presence on Earth." "No, it's not, because they're still not there," he said, "unless you believe in the afterlife. You don't believe in the afterlife, do you?" "I'm not sure." "I don't see how you can," he said. "Why?" "It raises too many questions if you do, like, how old are you in eternity? How old are your parents? Do you have to go to the toilet? Where does everyone sit? What do you do at night? And where are they now if they still exist? I know it's hard to accept the fact that people disintegrate into a little pile of chemicals worth about 67 cents on the current market, but in all likelihood that seems to be the case. so there's no point in grieving any longer than you want or have to. Don't you still feel grief over your mother? Not really, he said, blowing out a stream of smoke. That may be because she no longer knew who I was when I came into the room. Or it may be because it was a question of survival. I was fighting for my own life at the time. Of course, I always was with her. Or it may be that I'm not over it yet at all, but have to focus on other things. Grief is a luxury, I think, I can't afford. One has to move on. But I've watched people try, I said, and fail. Who? I've seen a lot of friends make mistakes. They lose someone, they try to start a new life, and make one wrong choice after another. But what's wrong with that? You always make mistakes, he said. How could you not? But no one wants to make mistakes, I said. No one does anything thinking it's going to be a mistake. Of course they don't, he said, but they do do something. The point is to choose something. It almost doesn't matter what. But choose. You have to start over. But what is the point of starting over? Henry Adams, after his wife killed herself, said he was too young to die, but too old to start over. That's the problem with our age. What does Henry Adams have to do with it? I was thinking of him when the church bells were ringing as I was walking through Lafayette Square last night. But why, he said. Because Adams had to deal with grief. He was 47 when his wife killed herself. She had just taken care of her own father till he died. Then she returned to Washington. Everything seemed fine. Then one day, while Henry Adams was downstairs reading, she went upstairs and swallowed one of the chemicals she used to develop her photographs. She left a note saying that if only she had one good quality, she would have continued living, but she didn't. Of course, she had lots of good qualities. She had just nursed her father through his final illness. It was pure depression, pure guilt. Adams was devastated, but his grief took an unusual form. The day after she died, he came downstairs, tore the mourning band off his arm, and forbade anyone to mention his wife's name ever again. Nor does he ever mention it in his autobiography. In contrast to Mary Todd Lincoln, I said, who grieved till she died, in a more ostentatious manner, who, you might say, tried to move on and couldn't. Because she was bipolar, said my friend, pushing his blonde bangs off his forehead. She was a woman who was subject to a string of disasters so awful, one after the other, you can see perfectly well why she never got over them. Nothing comes close to what happened to Mary Todd Lincoln. What about Jackie Kennedy, he said. Jackie Kennedy saw her husband shot too, but she moved on, a second act that was quite dignified and productive. And do you know why? Why, I said. Social class, he said, stubbing out a cigarette. I suspect it was simply social class. Of course, she was also medicated. What does grief have to do with social class? Everything, he said. At least it has to do with how you behave. Like a Roman or a banshee, Mary Lincoln ended up the second. But there are a lot of people who never get over certain things, I said. Something in them snaps. Something that binds them to life. The past becomes their home. The dead become more real to them than the living. Because there are more of the dead. They miss the dead, and when that happens, life stops. Speak for yourself, he said, standing up and tying the belt of his robe about him. He went to the window and looked down into 16th Street. For me, life has just begun. I'm like the woman behind the bar in a French movie, stuffing francs into her bra. I'm counting every chit I get. I want it all. And that's my advice to you. I think you should buy a place in Washington, he said, turning around. The market is never going to go down. It may level off, but you won't lose money. And we can find you someone. Everyone here is so middle class. Even the fags want to be married. I think you should start looking now.
The protagonist describes his landlord as a homosexual emeritus. And there's a part in the book where you say, sex had left him in its wake. He was a man who'd been riding the rapids of a river, who finally finds a cove, a still pool, and pauses there to catch his breath. Though after a while he realizes it's not just a pause, but rather the place he has ended up, beached in the sunlight, exhausted, no longer able to get in that cold and tumultuous river again. So I guess the question is what happens to a gay man who no longer desires sex, but still longs for intimacy?
Well, you've just read probably the paragraph that I like most in the book. I was, again, walking around San Francisco before coming here, and I went to a little park that I always go to, which I think is near Danielle Steele's house, the mother of us all. And it's got that incredible view. Those two brown shingled houses on either side, I don't know if she lives there or ever did, but there was a group of little Chinese-American school kids on that little tiny park area, and they were drawing. And it was so much fun listening to them. There were so many things going on. There was a little debate about whether who spoke Chinese and who didn't, and one little boy was ragging a little girl for speaking Chinese when she should have spoken English, and then a dog came out and frightened them all, and they all ran off. And I was just standing there immersed in these children's voices and their delight and their excitement and fun, and I began to have a rather sappy feeling. I thought to myself, this is what happens when you get older. You no longer cruise the streets. You find yourself in a park of Chinese-American school children and getting off on their delight in life. And I suppose that's just a normal progression in life, but it struck me the minute I got to San Francisco last night, in a sad way, that San Francisco always meant, for a New Yorker at least, for a male New Yorker, sex. And the minute you got here and you got out onto the street and started walking, there was a sexual undercurrent that was so powerful and so delicious. And this time I came back and I thought to myself, You're hearing an echo of that, but you're no longer, you're like a porpoise or a dolphin that can no longer hear those underwater things. You're just not in that energy field anymore. And then I thought this morning with the kids in the park, I thought, well, is this what one does? I guess so. Part of me is fine with that, and part of me thinks it's like a gangster having to retire. You feel this is a loss of virility or energy.
I want to talk a little bit about the letters of Mary Todd Lincoln, which you describe in the book as very engrossing letters. What do you think the protagonist ultimately learns from Mary Todd Lincoln?
I think it's in that line where the narrator asks the landlord why we care about the past, and he says, because it gives dignity to our paltry little lives, or something like that. It's what the celebrity culture does for people in contemporary times, I think history does for us in terms of the past. It takes you out of your own life. And why did Shakespeare write about kings? You know, why did he write about King Lear and Hamlet instead of the parlor maid and the peasant? There's also something that the ancient Greeks knew about tragedy, that it happened to elevated people. And Mary Todd Lincoln was this epic historical person, and yet she went through this wrenching, wrenching, horrible denouement to a life that had been happy until then.
There's a line in her letters, of course, because now I've gone and started reading the letters, but there's a line where, you know, this is after Lincoln has been assassinated, and a White House guard describes Mrs. Lincoln as being in a daze, almost in a stupor. She hardly spoke. And then he described her this way: no one could get near enough to her grief to comfort her. And to me, that's like the protagonist in grief, that even though he has friends that try to comfort him and give him advice, ultimately he cannot be comforted.
That was the whole point of the book. I knew, while I didn't know much about the book, how I would do it, I did know that I wanted the ending to be that after being exposed to all of these urges to move on, to start a new life, that he would not. And the initial last line of my book was much more grandiloquent than the one that closes it now. I actually wanted to close this novel with a line. He gets back to the house, and the last line was, "Grief was my home was grief." And it was decided that that was a little too much, I think, over the top. But that was exactly the point of the whole thing from the beginning.
Andrew Holleran, thank you.
Thank you.
For This Way Out, I'm Brian Goble in San Francisco.
I remember your name. I remember your voice. I remember your dreams. I remember your tears. I remember your life. I remember your love. Love never dies.
I remember your name.
I remember your name. I remember your voice. I remember your tears, I remember your life, I remember your love.
I remember your name.
You can get Andrew Holleran's Grief, published by Hyperion, in better brick-and-mortar bookstores and at the usual online destinations. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Tanya Kane Perry, Kareem Ferguson, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, and Brian Goble contributed program material. You heard excerpts from Jeffrey Moline's I Remember Your Name, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special CD thank you gifts. To sign up for our weekly email program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 5GFM, Kadena, South Australia, KHSR, Crescent City, California, WFCS, New Britain, Connecticut, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Perhaps you haven't heard the news.
Don't bother to step to me because I have no interest.
Look at you, I know what you need to do.
What you need to do is go and find yourself a man.
I was out in Chelsea late one Friday night. I was looking rather sexy in my jeans, low and tight. You saw me when you were on your side of the street, but you soon made your way over to my vicinity. You started to talk to me, your game was really weak. How I wish that you had stayed on your side of the street. Not trying to be mean, not trying to be cruel. Yes, I came here to get picked up, but not picked up by you.
Ooh, look at you,
I know what you're trying to do.
Why you trying to talk to me, you see there is no interest.
Look at you, what the hell you trying to do?
That thing you call dancing, I just don't understand.
Look at you, perhaps you haven't heard the news.
Don't bother to step to me because I have no interest.
Look at you, I know what you need to do.
What you need to do is go and find yourself a man.
Late one Saturday night I was at the club. I was drinking, had been smoking, I was so effed up. I headed to the dance floor to maintain my throne. As I did a pirouette, I noticed here you go. Started dancing next to me, you was getting up. You was up on me so much they thought you were my bodyguard. I tried to dance away, but you kept dancing close. So I did another pirouette and left the dance floor.
Ooh, look at you,
I know what you're trying to do.
Why you trying to talk to me, you see there is no interest.
Look at you, what the hell you trying to do?
That thing you call dancing, I just don't understand.
Look at you, perhaps you haven't heard the news.
Don't bother to step to me because I have no interest.
Look at you, I know what you need to do.
What you need to do is go and find yourself a man.
Ooh, what? You think I'm bougie? Okay, well. Look at you, I know what you're trying to do.
Why you trying to talk to me, you see there is no interest.
Look at you, what the hell you trying to do?
That thing you call dancing, I just don't understand.
Look at you, perhaps you haven't heard the news.
Don't bother to step to me because I have no interest.
Look at you, I know what you need to do.
What you need to do is go and find yourself a man.
Ooh. Ooh, what? You think I'm bougie? Okay, well, I don't give a damn what you think about me. I don't give a damn what you think about me. I don't give a damn what you think about me. Ooh.
And this is JD. That artist goes by just the name Thomas, and that's a brand new disc, a CD single from him called No Interest. Deborah?
Well, there's something new happening in Houston.
And it is of interest.
It is of interest, and it's exciting, and I'm part of it. I guess that's one reason I think it's exciting. But we have with us Joey Guerra.
Guerra.
And Ed Alvarez. And Joey is the new editor of the new Houston Voice, and Ed is the publisher. And the reason we're saying the new Houston Voice is because new format, new vision, new goals,
new people,
fresh ideas. Tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Well, it's a big change, I think, for a lot of people that haven't seen the publication yet. We've changed the format. We've changed the frequency of the actual print publication. It's now a monthly, full-color, glossy magazine as opposed to a weekly paper. It's heavy on arts and entertainment, but we definitely have a local news component. In this premiere issue with the article that you did, Deborah, so brilliantly.
Oh.
And the website really is the anchor of the entire renovation. The website is going to be updated several times a week. We have local bloggers that live in Houston, a lot of web-only stories, and it's just a whole new phase for the Houston Voice.
The format's different, though, too, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
The format of, as in terms of the content, or?
Well, what size?
Oh, the size.
If you're looking for the Houston Voice, and you're looking for a tabloid size paper, you're not going to find it.
It's a lot smaller. It'll fit in your back pocket, which I think was one of the reasons we shifted to this size, was a convenience factor. So somebody can just pick it up in a coffee shop, in a restaurant, in a bar.
People are more inclined to pick up something this size.
Right, exactly.
But what I noticed right away, comparing it to other publications that are available, this one has content.
Yes, that was
family content.
Family content. We have friendly content. We have real content. I mean, these stories that are in here are actual interviews with, be it a local person, a celebrity, a singer, a film director, and that was sort of my main goal in putting this together, is to have real, actual stories that require some work on the part of writers, which I think is something we don't see in a lot of other publications.
And it hits the stands when?
This week. Tomorrow, actually.
Okay, so it's
tomorrow.
A mid-month.
So
mid-month.
Mid-month publication.
Mid-month.
And it's, what is this, 8x5?
It's 9x5.
9x5. And it's, the color is beautiful. It's very impressive the way it's laid out. And
very
the
slick,
new the new logo, which is like a cartoon bubble.
A bubble, right.
And the premier issue has Cyndi Lauper on the cover. And then the website address is prominently displayed, www.houstonvoice.com.
Right.
Of course. And the website is an integral part of, and it's a new way of having a community publication.
Yes.
Expanding on community by using the website and building the community that way.
Right.
There'll be features on the website, not necessarily in the print version.
Even as of right now, the website launched officially at the end of last week. We have several web-only stories that are up there right now, along with the stories that are in the magazine.
I see that more and more in publications nowadays, like The Advocate, for example.
Right, exactly. So that, I mean, it's just a different way to reach people, because so many people these days get their information on the web.
The web
in the morning, late at night. You know, they look at the news, they read stuff. So that's our goal, is to just serve another part of the community.
So the online on the website is more getting your news as it happens.
Correct.
And the magazine is more in-depth and coverage of local people doing things, things going on in the community, and then of course some of the people like Cindy Lauper, someone who
entertainment features.
Entertainment, and I'm sure as JD will be quite interested on the up and coming queer entertainers that we like to feature on Queer Voices.
Right,
and not just the disco divas, the queer ones.
Exactly, exactly. The real gay
the
ones,
real
right?
Gay
ones. Right, right. Yeah, that's something we definitely want to include.
And, Joey, your background as a journalist, tell us a little bit about that.
My background, I've been writing for, gosh, almost a decade. I started at the University of Houston at the...
When you were two.
He looks like he's 18.
He is.
Thank you. But no, not quite. I started there. That was a college paper, but it was a five times a week. So I was...
The Daily Cougar?
Yeah. It's a weekly, you know, 5 days a
you
week.
You know, Tim Brookover used to work for
Did
the Daily
really?
Cougar. Yeah, so...
Wow. I didn't know that. No, I didn't know
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah.
I went from being a writer to being the entertainment editor. I was there for several years. Started at the Houston Chronicle while I was still in college. And then the day after graduation, went full-time at the Houston Chronicle. Was there for a few years. Took a break. Went back to the Houston Chronicle. And I'm still doing that along with this. So
wow. You're not busy enough.
No. I need a few more things to do. But, you know, it's so that I do... And the Chronicle's the same thing. I do web-only stuff. I do print stuff just like I do here. But in the Chronicle, my capacity is as a writer, whereas here is editor, so...
Mm-hmm. But you still get to write.
Yes, definitely. I did. That was one of the things when they approached me about doing this, was that they still wanted me to write for the publication and the website, so... And if you... Yeah, I did a few of the articles in there, so...
So, Ed... What role do you play in this? You were an account executive selling the ads.
Yes. Actually, I'm the publisher now, so I work in conjunction with Joey. And when we first sat down, we had our first meeting like 2 weeks ago or about a month ago, to kind of find out what vision we had for the publication. And, you know, fortunately, we have the same vision for it. We have the same mentality in terms of how we want it to look, how we want it to feel, and the message that we want to convey to the community. I think we're very fortunate to have Joey. He's very, very talented. He has great insight for someone of his age. He's very seasoned for someone his age, I think. So I think I'm very lucky to be able
Is
to work with him.
Is that another way of saying he's been around? I mean,
hey.
No, but, you know, this is basically, this new publication is just something that we've created to keep up with the pace of what's happening in the community and in society. You made the comment about people reading things online. The majority of the people now access their services, goods, and information through the internet. And like most businesses, we have to simply keep pace in order to stay in business. If we don't, then like other businesses, we'll just go out. And our goal here is to ensure the success and the longevity of The Voice, because it's something that we owe the community. So we have to do what we have to do to make it be around for the future, for the people coming up the ranks.
I don't know whether it's like because I'm a product of my times or whatever, but in my family, you read the paper and you watched the news. And I like that, being able to hold it in my hand right. and look at it and turn the pages, the kinetics of it. But I often don't have time
exactly.
to.
Exactly.
And if I'm online, then I can quickly check out, you know, like,
exactly.
okay, here's the news. Or it comes through one of the community organization group sites, you know. I found out about Tyrone Gardner's death
right.
that way. Unfortunately, I found out about far too many people's death that way. But, you know, the news is there, and you get that. But then, like the story about this film that you covered, this is the first I've seen about this. It starts off, Ash Christian is a fat girl, and he's proud of it.
Yeah.
What is that about?
The film is actually called Fat Girls. It's the kickoff film for the Houston Gay Lesbian Film Festival. And
which is...
This weekend.
And, at www.hglff.org.
Yes.
Houston Gay Lesbian Film Festival 2006. And it's they're doing a smaller version of the film festival.
It's smaller in one venue as opposed to several. Yeah. Uh-huh. But Ash Christian is actually from Texas. He grew up in Paris, Texas.
Oh, bless his heart.
And, he's 21 years old, and he wrote, directed, and plays the lead role in the movie, and it's really good. The whole message of the movie is that everyone has an inner fat girl inside of them. You know, someone who maybe feels shy or uncomfortable or like an outcast or an outsider, and that's sort of the message.
I have one outside of me as well.
Well, and that's the thing. In the movie, his best friend is a 300-pound girl. And I think initially you think that when they say fat girl, they're referring to her, but in the end you realize it's really referring to him. So, it's a sweet movie. It's a coming-of-age set in high school, so... And he's a really smart, talented guy, so...
Are you going to maintain archives on the website? So, like, next February, this comes out on DVD. Well, you know, I think there was a review in The Voice about this. I want to see what they said.
Right, yes. Yeah, there will be. And there's a search feature. There's a search engine on there also.
The whole purpose of this publication, though, is to drive traffic to our website. Right. When we looked at... we didn't want to... totally do away with the weekly feature. So it's online, as Joey indicated earlier. It will be updated several times throughout the week. So now, instead of getting the news on a weekly basis, you'll actually get it on a daily basis as the news unfolds, which actually none of the, no one else is doing that right now. And that's one thing that's going to separate us from everyone else, is the fact that everything will be fresh.
Right.
Fresh news, fresh information.
Mm-hmm. You have to really educate the readers that this is available.
And that's what we're doing with the publication.
You know, they're not used to.
Yeah.
If you look at the publication, if you look at the bottom, it even has the website.
Every page does.
Every page in this publication is designed to make you go to the website. For example, with Cyndi Lauper, we did an article on Cyndi Lauper. At the end of the article, it tells you we're giving away tickets to Cyndi Lauper. So everybody who's listening, sign on to the website.
You have to register
for free tickets. You can only do it online. We're giving away a Vespa. It's advertised in the publication.
Oh, I want both.
So
you can ride it to the concert.
Can I?
No, we'll let you win.
Okay.
You go online to register. CDs, videos, etc. You'll have to go to the website to register. And this is our way of conditioning society, right, or our community to go to the website where they can see the features, they can read all the local news, they can educate themselves. And more than anything, what we want the website to become is a forum for the community, for the entire community, so that they have the ability to interact with each other, to sound off to each other. As Joey indicated, we have blogs, which are open to everyone in the community. Anyone who feels that they would like to participate can write us, call us, and say, I have a great idea for a blog. You know, they can discuss it with Joey. If it's something that he feels merits attention, we'll upload it. People will be able to respond to it.
Yeah.
Well, I see that you're continuing one of my favorite comics, the Chelsea Boys. Although, really, guys, you're going to have to do the comics bigger size, because I can't see the fine print. You know, if I need a...
You can go to the website.
It's not even a magnifying glass. You need...
There you go, another plug for the website.
What do you call those? The ones the doctors use to see it. That's also in color. And and then you're going to have Dykes to Watch Out For,
yes,
one of my all-time favorite comics. The usual features, a lot of the usual features, mm-hmm, the things that people are used to seeing. And yet it's fresh, it's new, and it's... what do you see as your biggest challenge right now?
The biggest challenge.
Getting the word out?
I think it is. It's getting people familiar with the new format, because, like you said, it does have a lot of the same features, because we wanted to give people a few things that they were still familiar with. But it is,
you know, getting people to visit the website on a regular basis, bookmarking the website, coming back. That's why we're doing so many giveaways, so many things that are going to make people want to go to the site for a particular reason, concert tickets, an autographed CD. And then while they're there, oh, let me read this story, let me go here, let me do this.
But you're going to be doing local news updates daily. That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And do you anticipate, I mean, it's pretty thin right now. Do you anticipate it becoming a thicker publication?
Oh, yeah. At the present moment, this was our first publication, our first issue, I should say, and we had a very short window of opportunity to sell it. So the fact that we came out with 40 pages without even trying, since it's come out, advertisers have come on board. So we expect the publication to really take off. Mm-hmm. It's going to do very well next month. It'll be a larger publication.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to feature real gay and lesbian, transgender,
local
and bisexual people.
They'll
be, you know, it's not just always going to be some celebrity.
No, and that's the thing about the publication. We want people to understand that it's called the Houston Voice because this is the voice of the GLBT community in Houston. And this will be an opportunity for them to finally have a platform where they can come to and voice whatever it is they have to say.
Well, just flipping through it, I mean, one of the things that I noticed is, like, you're talking about the Fat Girl film that's opening, the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, and the young person who did it is a Texan.
Right.
And then you have this story that is about Todd Anderson.
Who's from Fort Worth.
Who's from Fort Worth. I mean, there's a real... I mean, it's nice that...
It is. That was really my goal, was to get, you know, just get Texas, get Houston in there, you know.
Any last thoughts that you want to get across to our listeners?
Visit our website, HoustonVoice.com. Win Cyndi Lauper tickets and read all our wonderful stories.
And expect Houston Voice to be available in your local community coffee shops and establishments, nightclubs.
Where you would think it would be.
Lobby, exactly. The lobby at KPFT.
Places.
And more places.
Yeah, the lobby at KPFT 419 Lovett Boulevard. We usually have the community publications about almost any subject that you want to know about. And we really appreciate Joey Guerra and Ed Alvarez from the new Houston Voice joining us this evening to tell you about this.
I hope in next issue we can read about the Houston Women's Festival.
We will. We definitely
will. That's the 12th annual Houston Women's Festival is Saturday, October 21st, noon at Jones Plaza. It's one of my favorite events every year. Find out more about that at www.hwfest.org.
You remember when we used to, like, wait around for something to happen that was for us, and now our calendars are filling up. We have, like, two or three things to go to on any given day.
That's great.
Well, we want to thank you for listening to Queer Voices tonight. Thank our guests, Elizabeth McLean and Sol Lara from Assisters, talking about the Decadent Dessert fundraiser. Go to assisters.org. That's going to be October 8th at South Beach. Jeff Reed from Houston Equal Rights Alliance, talking about the referenda that will be on the ballot in November. Very important for us to vote on. Of course, Joey and Ed for being with us. Carol Wyatt for ranting, even though she had just had a car.
I love her rants.
Yeah, I do too. And the folks who produced This Way Out at KPFA in Los Angeles.
Next Monday night, in the second hour, is, let me talk about Queer Music Heritage first, because I sometimes forget to do it.
Why do you want to talk about that?
Queer Music Heritage, the second hour next week, will be a wonderful interview with Nedra Johnson, a very talented black artist from New York. And Joan Devlin will talk earlier in the show with Sarah Gish. We should know her. She's been on many times. And...
yeah, she's got all kinds of things going on. Plus, you'll hear This Way Out and more community news and events. Queer Voices is on every Monday following Interchange with Larry Payne from 8 to 10. And we're on the web at www.kpft.org. So you can listen for the first time or again or download and save. The shows are archived for 60 days. Stay tuned for World Village Cafe and thanks for listening to Queer Voices.
have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
KPFT is seeking candidates to run for seats on the local station board. We need you to become involved in this very important election. Please review our candidate materials online. Nominations are open until September the 25th. Your voice can be the difference. Thanks for supporting KPFT, Radio for Peace.
Renowned war correspondent and author Chris Hedges will speak on the topic of American fascists, the Christian right and the war on America on September 25, 2006, 7:30 p.m. at Rothko Chapel, 3900 Upon and Saul Ross in Houston, Texas. To RSVP or for additional...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.